All right, so we'll finish the story of Daniel in the lion's den. And then we'll at least do Daniel 2 as well. Start the visions. All right. So these guys are jealous. It's all based on jealousy. The bottom line is, if we are going to behave as godly men and women at work, people may not like that. Right? And you have to be willing to lose your job. In this case, it went a little bit beyond that. So the administrators, verse 6, and the satraps went as a group to the king and said, "My king, may King Darius live forever." These guys are so sincere. Oh, may you live forever. Oh, may you live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed. We've all agreed. We're all unanimous on this, king. Every single one of us. Actually, it's the two guys who are making all the money off of here. But anyway, that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days, except to you, Your Majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, Your Majesty, issue the decree and put it in writing so it cannot be altered in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. So King Darius put the decree in writing. So what's going on here, sort of psychologically? What's going on here?
They're building his ego.
Right. They're like, yeah, kissing his whatever, you know. Yes. Buttering him up. In other words, what they're doing is they're using his ego. They're manipulating his ego. By the way, the Persian and Mede Empire, because it was the Persian Mede Empire, The king did not have absolute authority, especially presumably Darius the Mede. So in other words, there was sort of a balance of power, kind of. So apparently if the king made a decree, then it was binding and the king could not change that decree. They didn't have unlimited power. So they couldn't just act arbitrarily. All right? So that's the deal. So you can guess, you know the story, but even if you didn't know the story, you can guess exactly where this is going, right?
No, I didn't ever notice it before, but right there in the verse it says Medes before Persians.
Yes, correct.
And that's probably because he's a Mede.
Exactly.
Not the
Great thing to notice. So anyway, foolishly, our friend Darius put it in writing. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God just as he had done before. Now, why do you think Daniel did this? If it were you or me, what would we have probably done?
We
would have closed the windows. So why didn't he close the windows? Yeah, but I agree, but
taking a stand, I like that answer.
But I mean,
he's like to know that God was more.
Well, I think also too, it wasn't that he was rebelling as much as he was just doing what Daniel does.
Right.
He didn't think about it.
Because it said just as before.
Right.
It wasn't like it was an active rebelliousness. It was, I'm just gonna go do what
I'm not gonna be intimidated.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. Making it clear, you can do with me what you want, essentially.
Yeah.
You could have interpreted it as like in your face. You could have interpreted it that way, but you're not interpreting that way. You're interpreting it as, I do what I do. If you don't like it, it's okay if you don't like it, but I do what I do, okay?
Yeah, it's like we sustain righteousness.
Right. So if it had been, they make the decree and then he purposely does this just to, you know, get there, that may not even have been a righteous thing. Okay, so still, you have to admit, it is surprising. I'm pretty sure I would not have done that. I'm pretty sure I would have closed the window. Of course, Daniel's 80-something years old, so, you know, maybe he figures...
I'm ready to go anyway.
Yeah.
They kill me very innocent to pray.
So again, just let us be reminded that people will try to use your righteous behavior against you. Just recognize that. You know, and in fact, I don't know if I mentioned it, but at my former college, I had the reputation of being like the Christian professor. There were plenty of professors who were, I guess, Christians, but I was the advisor for all the Christian clubs on campus, I think all of them. And some student didn't like that. I had a student who basically went to the dean and tried to said, you need to sue this professor. He tried to get me sued because on my website, on my school website, I had a link to my other website and to the books that I'd written. As if that somehow, you know, I just mentioned I have some sort of religious conviction, you know, so he wanted me to be sued. And he demanded, essentially, the dean to sue me. Of course, the dean laughed it off. Right.
Oh, my goodness.
But, you know, just understand that people may not appreciate it. And more than once in my career, because they write little comments at the end of the semester, and they say, you know, he's too religious or something like that. It's like, yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. All right, hopefully they say that about you.
Yeah.
Hopefully some people don't appreciate the way you act. Not that we're out to go get create trouble. And you could almost think of Daniel as kind of going too, you could, kind of going too far here. Like, you know, but again, like you said, his window was always open. So he just kept his window open. All right? So that's what happened.
Because there's the other thing, too. We talked about it in my small group when we did this, too. It's like if he had suddenly decided, oh, I'm going to close my window today, that would have given people even right. more reason to be like, what's going on in Daniel's place? We know he does this every day.
True.
So then it would have been even worse for him, I think.
Mm-hmm. Good. So when Daniel learned...
Is he in the lion's den?
Well, because he would have been found out, and then they're like, well, you were trying to deceive us. Now there's your corruption.
It's cool because these guys knew that he was going to keep his window open. They knew it.
Right.
Yep.
They knew him well enough. Hopefully they know you well enough that if we try to get him on the point of religion, we got him. We got him. All right? They went as a group. They found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree. Didn't you publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or human except to you, your majesty, will be thrown into the lion's den? And the king said, yeah, that's what I said. That's the way it works. That's the Persian Mede system. Then they said to the king, well, guess what? Your favorite, your favorite guy has been praying to the God of Jehovah. And you can imagine, bing, you know, bing, the light goes on. Oh, now I get it. All right, I totally get it. He's like, what an idiot I was. They got me. I'm sure he figured it out in like 2 seconds. But it's too late, apparently. Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, your majesty, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays 3 times a day. When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed and decided he's going to find a way to get around this law. But there was no way to do it. Then the man went as a group to King Darius and said to him, hello, king, here's the law. Are you going to follow it or not? If not, we're going to tell probably Cyrus and you'll probably be deposed. Something like that. So the king gave the order. They brought in Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve, continually rescue you. A stone was brought. You know the story. Mm-hmm. King returned to his palace, had a sleepless night. Verse 19, at the first light of dawn, the king got up, hurried to the lion's den. I mean, this guy, I mean, he loved Daniel. He didn't just appreciate the fact that he was not corrupt and was saving him millions and millions of dollars. That's all kinds of money. And also basically making it so nobody else can be corrupt either. But it seems like he just genuinely loved him. Right?
It says he called out in an anguished voice.
Yeah. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God whom you serve continually been able to rescue from the lions? Now, apparently... he believed it was possible.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel answered, "May the king live forever." Well, you know, that's not likely, but my God sent his angel and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I've been found innocent in his sight. Nor have I ever done anything wrong before you, your majesty. And you know how the story ends, right? It's kind of like a little bit like the story of Esther, right? Not Mordecai. Who's the bad guy in Esther? The bad guy in Esther. Haman, yeah. He got hung on the very gallows that had been built for Mordecai. All right, at the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den along with their wives and children. Ouch. Before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Imagine that night. Imagine that night. Daniel's in there and, you know, like the lions don't go for him, but they're just, I don't know, did he think he fell asleep that night at all? I don't think so. And then the lions are probably, you know, doing what lions do. They kind of lick their paws and doing this. And like
yawning maybe.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, no, maybe.
Amazing.
Now,
just like the story of the fiery furnace, would the meaning of the story be changed if the lions had eaten Daniel? I'm not sure it would.
He would be considered a martyr.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, and again, who is this story written for? According to my claim at the beginning of this class, who's this? Right, the Jews who are being told to compromise with their spiritual principles to incorporate Greek philosophy and practice into their religion, to kind of be half Jewish, half Greek. And the message is, don't do it. Don't ever compromise, not even a little bit. When it comes to a religious conviction, do not compromise at all. Then there's this awesome poem that King Darius wrote. This is amazing. Look at this. May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he's the living God. He endures forever. His kingdom will never be destroyed. This is a psalm. All right? There's a psalm written by, of all people, Darius the Mede. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. And again, clearly the writer of Daniel realizes that Cyrus is the head honcho. He's not wrong. He's not confused. He understands that Darius the Mede is serving under Emperor Cyrus. There's no mistake here. All right. So that ends the practical stories of Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and Daniel. Any thoughts, any comments on chapters 1, 3, 4, 5, and 6? Any new convictions?
I like the one thing where you said people will try to use your Christian life against you. To kind of, even though I work in a relatively, I would say, spiritually focused group of people, like, I feel like that's true, especially with my conviction about how I shouldn't say certain things. Like, oh, you don't have to worry about that. You don't have to worry about that. Because they curse a lot, even though they are spiritually focused and Christians.
Really?
Well, one of my primary boss does not, like the big head honcho, but like, what I would classify as the office manager, she curses but goes to church at the bridge. The person who I'm literally training right now claims to be a Christian, doesn't go to church, and curses all the time and talks about wanting to punch people and stuff. I'm like, yeah, right, whatever.
Wow.
Yeah. The only other person who's probably closer than my primary boss to what I would classify as a disciple is my other colleague who I trained before, because he, like me, tries very hard not to do certain things that otherwise, but his conviction about the fellowship, I think, is where his deficiency is.
Uh-huh. So. Well, amen.
But yeah, I get that, like, impression unilaterally. It's like,
Like, you don't have to do that. You don't have to worry about apologizing to me for swearing. You don't need to even worry about that. That's not a big deal. I was like, yeah, it is.
It's a big deal. Yeah.
Because the tongue, though it is a small part of your body, steers the whole ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in my classes, when students would use profanity, I just say something. You can't do that. It's not right. I had colleagues who would use profanity in their classrooms all the time. And I did not, I mean, I basically would go to my administrators and say, you know, this is not acceptable. We can't be doing this kind of stuff. So anyway, good. This is the Cyrus cylinder. I just threw it in there. This really relates to the book of Ezra or to the book of Haggai. But Cyrus, who basically, according to Ezra, Cyrus issued a decree saying to the Jews, go back with your people and go back to your cities, go back to your towns, reoccupy them and rebuild the temple. Which, again, on the face of it, no ancient kingdom ever did. Let people go back. What they would do is they'd take them out of their home to try to take away their culture so they could rule over their empire. But this is the Cyrus cylinder, which right there, there it says, go back to, you know, I don't know what it actually says. But essentially, this is a decree to all the peoples to go back to their home areas, to reestablish their religion, to live in peace, that it would be tolerant of all religions and all those kinds of things, which was a unique policy in the ancient world. By the way, it's in the British Museum. It's only like this big. It's amazing. It's tiny, tiny, tiny letters. That's a hugely blown up thing. Yeah, it's probably like a foot and a half long. Anyway, Daniel chapter 2. All right, so we're transitioning now. We're turning away from these amazing stories, convicting stories about how we should live in the religious world and how we should live in the kind of the real world of work, how we should behave, how God wants us to act in spite of any kind of persecution. And then now we're going to be looking at visions of the future. Daniel 2 is the wimpiest of them all. It's still quite amazing. But honest, remember the connection. So this is proof positive beyond any possible shadow of a doubt. So if you don't believe it, just wake up and smell the coffee. God rules the nations. That he can do what he wants to do. Now, does he usually intervene? Usually he does not. He does not normally intervene. You know, if you're late to work, the light's going to turn red because it would have just turned red. You know what I'm saying? And you can pray for the Los Angeles Rams to win, but, you know, probably he's not going to answer that prayer. All right, he does not intervene. And if you get sick, probably the reason you got sick is because other people get sick too. You know what I'm saying? So when I say God's in control, I don't mean that God necessarily will intervene. But God,
may.
He can if he wants. And if he does, if he wants to, he will. And we just need to understand that as we're praying. So, in other words, the visions are the reason for the other thing. That's what we're saying. You got it? So we're going back in time. And some of the things I said, for example, in Daniel 5, see, this is just like before. Ah, Daniel 2 that we hadn't read. Okay, so. Now, we're going back. It says here in Daniel 2, verse 1, in the second year of his reign. So this is the year 605 B.C. This is within just months of when Hananiah, Azariah, Mishael, and Daniel, otherwise known as Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and Belteshazzar, were taken as captives. So this is the very beginning of his reign. We are rewinding the tape 68 years, if not more, from Daniel in the lion's den. Daniel in the lion's den is after Cyrus took over. Is it a year later, 3 years later? We don't really know. So roughly 70 years we're going back in time. Okay? So in the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled. He could not sleep. So he summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. When we came in and stood before the king, he said to them, I have had dreams that troubled me, and I want to know what it means. Then the astrologers answered the king, may the king live forever. There you go. Typical thing there, I guess. Tell your servants the dream, and we will interpret it. So this is kind of interesting. So Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and I would call it a religious experience. So he wakes up in the morning, and he's like, oh, my gods. Oh, my gods. This is a message from the gods. And it's like he knew it. I don't know how he knew it, but it must have been so vivid. And it's like, you know, I have to know what this is about. He knew that it was a prophecy or a dream that concerned him. So he wanted to know what it was about. So he calls in all these fake religious people, you know, the ones who Sunday morning and they pay somebody $100 to sit in a wheelchair and, you know, they wheel him across and he stands up or, you know, all these sort of fake supposed miracles that happen all the time. I think some people are sincere, but their back hurts a little bit less. And then 2 days later, his back to hurting just as much as it did before, these kinds of things. The bottom line is these are religious fakers. So they do their divinations and they do their reading of the stars and they do their astrology. It's all a bunch of baloney. And it's kind of like a conspiracy. Everybody knows it's really a bunch of baloney, but they act like they believe it. That's kind of how it works in these situations. And they say, tell us the dream and we'll tell you the meaning. He's there. Not this time. The gig, is, as they say, is up. Or the jig or gig. I don't know what the expression is. The gig is up. All right. You're going to tell me the dream. And then you're going to tell me the division. Oh, Nebuchadnezzar. Nobody's ever been able to do that. Well, you've been telling me for 50 years that's what you're doing all the time. You lying, deceiving magicians, astrologers, and fake religious people. All right? So what we need to do is we need to go to one of these services of these groups I'm not going to mention. We have to go somebody with a hand that is shriveled completely. You know, they've been, disabled for 40 years, you know, and have them just fix that thing up. I think they'll be really angry at you if you challenge them to their face. Or let's say they do their speaking in tongues and you say, all right, let's do this. Let's have three of your interpreters interpret it and let's see if they agree with the interpretation. And if they don't, then which one is real? Or are they all a bunch of liars? Well, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. We're not going to do what Nebuchadnezzar did. But that's what he did. All right? All right. So the king replied to the astrologers, this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses turn into piles of rubble. But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. So tell me the dream and interpret it. And they replied, let the king tell his servants the dream and we will interpret it. The king answered, I am certain you are trying to gain time because you realize that this is what I have firmly decided. If you don't tell me the dream, there's only one penalty for you. You have conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things. There's a lot of religion in Bakersfield that is exactly that. It's exactly that. It's pretty sad. Okay. So then, tell me the dream. And I'll know you can interpret it. The astrologers answered the king, there's no one on earth who can do this. Nobody works actual miracles. This is just a religious game we've been playing. Come on, this is going to go along with the game. Touch that TV and give us $1,000 and you'll have fame and wealth and you'll never be sick again. Just let me drive my really, really nice car, my fancy house, and we'll all agree that it's all really Jesus and blah, blah, blah. Makes me sick. Anyway, so they said, it's too difficult. Now, what the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods. And they don't live among humans. Oh, well, they've changed their tune, you know? They've been claiming all along that that's exactly what he does. This made the king so angry and furious that he ordered the execution of all of them. So anyway, I think you know what happens here. So it turns out amongst the astrologers, magicians, and sorcerers of every kind, among these advisors to the king, it included Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and Daniel. All right? So let's go down to verse 19. During the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel. So basically, Daniel says, I can't interpret this dream. I cannot interpret it, but there's a God in heaven who can. He always gives credit to God. So, verse 20, and he said, praise be to the God of Father forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. He changes times and seasons. He deposes kings. He raises up others. He gives wisdom to the wise, knowledge to the discerning, reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank and praise you, God of my ancestors. You give me wisdom and power. You have made known to me what was asked. We asked of you. You have made known to us the dream of the king. So anyway, Daniel goes to Arioch, the kind of advisor to the king. He said, do not execute the wise men of Babylon. Take me to the king and I'll interpret his dream. Arioch took Daniel to the king at once and said, I have found a man among the exiles from Judah who can tell the king what his dream means. The king asked Daniel, are you able to interpret it? And notice what he says. Verse 27, no wise man, enchanter, magician, or diviner can explain to the king the mysteries asked about, but there is a God in heaven. So does Daniel give credit to, as usual?
God.
Always. Every single opportunity he has. Daniel does not say, I can interpret the dream. He says, God can interpret the dream. We can't make the church grow. God can make the church grow. We can't, find the people who are open. God can send the people that are open to us, all right? We need to be like Daniel, always recognizing not only in our heart, but even to those around us, that if anything happens that's good, it's from God, not from us. But there's a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has shown Nebuchadnezzar what will happen. Anyway, then he tells him the dream. The dream was of a massive statue. Head of gold, arms and chest of silver, belly and thighs of bronze, legs of iron. One of the legs was solid iron. The other leg was iron mixed with clay. And then what happens is, notice this kingdom is divided, united, united, or divided. All right, he's going to talk about that. And then what happens is, a little tiny rock comes and it grows and it grows and it grows. It gets bigger and then it hits the statue and smashes it to pieces. And then Nebuchadnezzar says, oh my Jehovah. Oh my Jehovah. All right. So now let's read the interpretation. So there's four parts. What are those four kingdoms? Don't look on the screen. Don't look on the screen. What are those four kingdoms? Nope.
Persia.
Media, Greece, and Rome.
Yeah. Right. Which of those is really a dual one? The first, second, third, or fourth?
Second.
Well, Jan's right also. Technically, it was not a dual empire. It was a divided empire. The second one, Persia, the Persian Mede Empire. Okay? Good. This is the dream, and now we will interpret it to the king. Your Majesty, you are King of Kings. The God of heaven has given you dominion. Now, how do we know that God gave him dominion? Just because Daniel says so? The answer is no, because of Isaiah 39, verse 2, a prophecy probably written 70 or 80 years before Nebuchadnezzar was even born, in which God had said through Isaiah to the envoys from Babylon, that the items of the temple be brought to your palace there in Babylon, as will the children of the king. Actually, it was probably the great-grandchildren, but either way. Okay, your majesty, you're king of kings. The God of heaven has given you dominion and power and might and glory. In your hands he has placed all of mankind, the beasts of the field, birds of the air. Wherever they live, he has made you ruler over all of them. You are the head of gold. Now he's buttering him up, all right, because he's about to give him some bad news. After you, another kingdom will arise inferior to yours. Now, wait a minute. Really? Okay. Here's Nebuchadnezzar's empire. Here's the one that came later. Inferior?
I think he's just trying to save face.
Okay. Now, I would say this. No city of Persia or Media was ever like Babylon. The capitals of Persia and Media were Ecbatana, Susa, and Persepolis. Later on, by the way, he's going to be at the citadel here in Susa, looking over the river, looking west. That'll be in Daniel 8. He has a dream where he's in the palace in Susa, which he probably did visit. But anyway, so it was the greatest empire in that it had the greatest city. Babylon was maybe the greatest city of the entire ancient world. It's hard to think of a good second choice other than Babylon. But anyway, after you, another kingdom will rise inferior to yours. Next, a third kingdom. He goes through that really fast. Just don't worry. It's just this. Don't worry about it. Next will come a third kingdom, one of bronze, will rule over the whole earth. And of course, that's the empire of Alexander. Finally, there'll be a fourth kingdom, strong as iron, for iron breaks and smashes everything. As iron breaks things to pieces, so it'll crush and break all the others. What is the most powerful empire of the ancient world? For sure, Rome. Not the largest. The largest was the Mongol Empire. The second largest was probably Alexander's empire. But the greatest, most powerful, enduring empire in all history, the Iron Empire, is Rome. Just as you saw the feet and toes were partly of baked clay and partly of iron, so it'll be a divided kingdom. Just like in the statue it's a divided kingdom, he says, in fact, Rome will also be a divided kingdom. Now, was Rome a divided kingdom?
Yeah, because Rome had all of its individual governors from the people they conquered set up in power.
Well, probably given the two legs, that's probably not what he's talking about, though. Diocletian established a second capital, which eventually became known as Constantinople.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so there was the Eastern Roman Empire and the Western Roman Empire. After Theodosian, they were literally two separate. Do I use the word literally as much as it's like been 10 times. I don't really. I need to stop using that word so much. But there were literally two empires. At least I'm using it correctly. I say, what about this divided empire? Let's see something else about it. All right. It will be a divided kingdom, yet will have some of the strength of iron in it, even as you saw iron mixed with clay, as the toes were partly iron and partly clay, so this kingdom will be partly strong and partly brittle. All right, so there's Eastern Rome, centered in Constantinople. Eastern Rome, centered in Constantinople. And Western Rome, centered in Rome. Actually, it was centered in Milan by the 5th century. All right, so which is the one that was brittle, east or west?
East.
No, east was strong. Eastern Roman Empire lasted for over 1,000 years. Finally, in 1456 A.D., is that hanging right? 1453 A.D. So Eastern Rome lasted for over 1,000 years. Divided after 395, endured for 1,000 years. In fact, almost 1,100 years. Whereas Western Rome fell within two generations. And I believe it's the year 425, 426. Attila the Hun sacked Rome. And after that, Rome wasn't even the capital anymore. And the empire completely ended. There were no more Roman emperors within a couple of generations of when the kingdom divided.
So is that why they called themselves the Byzantines?
Well, eventually, instead of it being called Constantinople, it's called Byzantium. And it was called the Byzantine Empire because it was no longer called Constantinople. It was called Byzantium. Now they call it Istanbul. Right. And so so the bottom line is, I just said a few minutes ago that this is not a very impressive prophecy. But it's pretty impressive because Daniel just gave a very, very quick outline of the history of the Near East for the next 2,000 years. That's pretty good. He tells us the number of empires there will be. He tells us which will be the strongest of them. He tells us which will cover the most territory. He tells us that the strongest one will be partially strong and partially weak. But we're not done. Jan gave me that time signal, but I'm going to go about 4 more minutes. I'm going to finish this chapter. All right? Verse 44. In the time of those kings, in the time of which kings? Presumably in the time of the Roman kings. The God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, nor will it be left to another people. It will crush all those kingdoms, bring them to an end, but it will itself endure forever. This is the meaning of the vision of the rock cut out of the mountain, but not by human hands, a rock that broke the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and gold to pieces. The great God has shown the king what will take place in the future. The dream is true. Its interpretation is trustworthy. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell prostrate before Daniel. So what is this kingdom?
Christianity.
Yeah, we're a part of that. It's the church, which was established during the time of the Roman kings, which is still around. And ultimately, the church subsumed and conquered, in essence, Rome. And right now, the church seems kind of weak, I guess, especially in Europe. But the bottom line is, it will endure forever. So my conclusion is, it's true. God rules the nations. Do not fear. Time's up. We're going to have our last class, Daniel 7, 8, 9, 10. We're going to cover 5 chapters next week.
Oh, wow.
Whew. Okay.
Get ready to buckle up.
Oh, yeah. I can normally do it in like 20 minutes because I do this whole thing in an hour, so it's doable. Great.
Awesome. Next week, right?
Yeah. Mind blowing.